when the divinity had hooked him. But that had just been a flicker. Now it had the solid power of real belief behind it. He looked down at a rustling below him and saw green shoots springing out of the dry sand around his feet. Bloody hell, he thought. I really am a god. This could be very embarrassing. He shouldered his way through the press of people until he reached the riverbank and stood there in a thickening clump of corn. As the crowd caught on, those nearest fell to their knees and a circle of reverentially collapsing people spread out from Tepic like ripples. But I never wanted this. I just wanted to help people live more happily, with plumbing. I wanted something done about run-down inner-city areas. I just wanted to put them at their ease and ask them how they enjoyed their lives. I thought schools might be a good idea so they wouldn't fall down and worship someone just because he's got green feet. And I wanted to do something about the architecture. As the light drained from the sky, like steel going cold, the pyramid was somehow even bigger than before. If you had to design something to give the very distinct impression of mass, the pyramid was it. There was a crowd of figures around it, unidentifiable in the grey light. Tepic looked around the prostrate crowd until he saw someone in the uniform of the palace guard. "You, man, on your feet!" he commanded. The man gave him a look of dread, but did stagger sheepishly upright. "What's going on here?"
"Oh, king, who is the lord of—"
"I don't think we have time," said Tepic. "I know who I am. I want to know what's happening."
"Oh, king, we saw the dead walking. The priests have gone to talk to them."
"The dead walking?"
"Yes, oh, king."
"We're not talking about not alive people here, are we?"
"Yes, oh, king."
"Oh, well, thank you. That was very succinct. Not informative, but succinct. Are there any boats around?"
"The priests took them all, oh, king."
Tepic could see that this was true. The jetties near the palace were usually thronged with boats, and now they were all empty. As he stared at the water, it grew two eyes and a long snout, to remind him that swimming in the Dajel was as feasible as nailing fog to the wall. He stared at the crowd. Every person was watching him expectantly, convinced that he would know what to do next. He turned back to the river, extended his hands in front of him, pressed them together, and then opened them gently. There was a damp, sucking noise, and the waters of the Dajel parted in front of him. There was a sigh from the crowd, but their astonishment was nothing to the surprise of a dozen or so crocodiles who were left trying to swim in 10 feet of air. Tepic ran down the bank and over the heavy mud, dodging to avoid the tails that slashed wildly at him as the reptiles dropped heavily onto the riverbed. The Dajel loomed up as two khaki walls, so that he was running along a damp and shadowy alley. Here and there were fragments of bones, old shields, bits of spear, the ribs of boats. He leapt and jinked around the debris of centuries. Ahead of him, a big bull crocodile propelled itself dreamily out of the wall of water, flailed madly in midair, and flopped into the ooze. Tepic trod heavily on its snout and plunged on. Behind him, a few of the quicker citizens, seeing the dazed creatures below them, began to look for stones. The crocodiles had been undisputed masters of the river since primordial times, but if it was possible to do a little catching up in the space of a few minutes, it was certainly worth a try. The sound of the monsters of the river beginning the long journey to Handbaghood broke out behind Tepic as he sloshed up the far bank. A line of ancestors stretched across the chamber, down the dark passageway, and out into the sand. It was filled with whispers going in both directions, a dry sound like the wind blowing through old paper. Dill lay on the sand, with Gurn flapping a cloth in his face.
"What they're doing?" he murmured.
"Reading the inscription," said Gurn. "You ought to see it, Master, the one doing the reading. He's practically—"
"Yes, yes, all right," said Dill, struggling up.
"He's more than 6,000 years old. And his grandson's listening to him and telling his grandson, and he's telling his grandson—"
"Yes, yes, all right. And Kuft too said unto the first, 'What may we give unto you who has taught us the right ways?'" said Tepikaimon, who was at the end of the line. But not immediately, of course, because messages change in the telling, and some ancestors were not capable of perfect enunciation, and others were trying to be helpful and supplying what they thought were lost words.
The message received by Tepikaimon originally began, "Handcuffed to the bed, the answer.